Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 85, recorded Tuesday, November 30th, 2010. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: importance of hotel bathrooms and maximizing your miles. An interview with the founder of GoMiles.com. So this week, coming to you once again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, after the 1 week a year that I make a determined effort to stay off the road, that is Thanksgiving week. I wasn't successful last year. A client had scheduled a meeting in Philadelphia the Monday before Thanksgiving, so I ended up doing an 18-hour up and back, you know, sort of the last flight out Saturday night and returned Monday afternoon, just to avoid the building crowds. But this year, I've got a bit more control over my travel schedule, and that means I actually put my roller bag away over last week, not just leaving it lying around empty in the bedroom. Look, I hate to sound elitist, but you know, Thanksgiving week is always amateur week at the airports. Families and frequent flyers, I mean, they're going to be the ones trying to take a water bottle through the security checkpoint or taking 2 to 3 shots at the metal detector before getting their jewelry off, and then walking slow 4 or 5 abreast down the concourse, you know, placing some 5 adjective order at the Starbucks, crowding the jetway door, trying to board with the handful of elites who couldn't stay off the road. I mean, why should I torture both of us? You know, so I just stay home and keep myself calm with a weekend-long, sort of low-grade, tryptophan-induced stupor supplemented by a steady diet of football and good-quality beer. So watching the TSA pat-down controversy from a distance, a long distance, from my couch, rather than being in the, you know, kind of in the milieu, it was entertaining rather than frustrating, though even though it did cost me that opportunity to earn the special Don't Touch My Junk badge on Foursquare. Now, coming during amateur week, there were more than enough infrequent travelers willing to put themselves in front of a reporter's microphone and say, I don't care how long I wait or how they need to touch me, I just want to be safe. I mean, they're always there when the TSA turns the screw a bit tighter. But this time, there were an equal number of people saying, wait a minute. I mean, I thought the woman who walked through LAX screening in a black bikini made a great point.
I feel like the TSA is making travelers uncomfortable, and I think that we can have security measures that don't make people feel uncomfortable.
So what have you decided?
I'm wearing my bikini.
Why?
Because I don't want to do a body scan, and I'm hoping that by wearing a bikini, they will be able to see everything they need to see, and we can avoid a body pat down as well.
Although not many people voluntarily chose the full-body groping during the national opt-out day on Wednesday, I mean, the organizers did get an impressive amount of attention focused on the TSA's screening procedures. And by Wednesday, John Pistole, however he pronounces his name, the TSA administrator, you know, that guy must have just gotten tired of getting wired up for the umpteenth remote interview with some news show. I think I saw him like 3 days in a row on the Today Show, at least. I mean, the pileup of interviews and media investigations made the point that frequent flyers figured out a long time ago. I mean, the TSA's justification, the scanning and the gropings are a necessary evil for secure flight, is a false choice. I mean, most frequent flyers don't think the TSA and their security theater makes us more secure. Instead, the TSA is just one more hassle we've got to deal with before we can get to our destination. And I think last week's hoopla just drove that point home to everyone else. So following up, you know, first of all, here's a nice audio comment from Linda Martin of the Indie Travel Podcast.
Hi, Mike. Linda here from the Indie Travel Podcast. I'm on a train in Thailand going north from Bangkok, and I just opened up my iPod to see what podcast they were on, and I was so excited to see that there was a new Travel Commons. So thanks heaps for coming back on, and we're looking forward to the next one. Bye.
Well, Linda, thanks for taking the time out from yours and Craig's sort of jealousy-inspiring tour through Southeast Asia to drop that line. Thanks also to the folks who liked, if liked is now a verb, the Travel Commons fan page on Facebook. And to the folks who follow me on Twitter, thank you also. I try to use both services to keep in touch with listeners between these episodes, especially with the sort of expanded spacing between episodes that I've done recently. It's funny, I was scanning the archives the other day looking for the first year recap show. I wanted to put it in the iTunes feed. I realized that it had fallen off. And I realized that almost half of the Travel Commons episodes, 45% to do the math, were done in that first year in 2005. Now, of course, I had a lot of content to mine, sort of years of travel notebooks and kind of a good backlog of travel stories. So it was easy to do a weekly show at first. And you know, now that I'm doing well just to keep a monthly schedule, the Facebook and Twitter short burst messages make it easy for me to talk with everyone or those who are interested between the episodes. You know, one item that I ended up posting on the Facebook page was a link to an article by Gulliver, which is The Economist's business travel blog, which then itself linked to an article in The Atlantic about the break-even point between flying versus driving when traveling. Back in one of my first year episodes, number 23, for those of you playing the home game, I calculated the break-even point to be right at about the 3-hour, 180-mile mark. And that's the distance between Chicago and Indianapolis. Including all the time involved with catching that hour-long flight to Indy, so that a half-hour drive to O'Hare, 45 minutes between check-in, security, and boarding. Nowadays, I give myself 60, so it shows the shows how the TSA has increased. Then the one-hour flight time, a half-hour for deplaning and getting the rental car, and then another half-hour to drive to the meeting site. That got me to 3 hours and 15 minutes. But like I said, that calculus is 5 years old. In light of reduced flight availabilities and increased TSA hassles, The Economist and Atlantic writers declared the new fly versus drive break-even point to be 8 hours or 500 miles. Now, that's almost triple my number from 5 years ago. If it's under 500 miles, I'll do anything rather than hop on a plane, says The Atlantic's Megan McArdle. And if it's over 500 miles, it better be way over, or I'd better be carrying a cooler with a still-beating heart in it. Now, anecdotally, I know a number of families who used to fly to places like South Carolina and Florida for Thanksgiving, and they've this year opted instead for sort of that 10 to 12-hour drive. Now, if I'm an airline exec, these numbers tell me that I'm in a no-growth industry, that my one remaining value proposition will get you there faster than you can on your own. That value proposition is being negated by the hassles, both my own making, given flight availabilities, and the government's, namely the TSA. Those hassles that surround me are really impacting my value proposition, and I ought to be afraid. Speaking of afraid, I'm sure that everyone will recall the uptick in surgical masks on planes during last year's H1N1 flu pandemic. Well, after that whole thing died under its own hype, it's been pretty much back to business as usual. There's the sort of, one-off occasional Asian mask wearer, but for the most part, people are going naked, in their face. So I was interested, I think the verb is enthralled, when a guy next to me on an O'Hare to LAX flight a few months back whipped out a box of disinfectant wipes and cleaned all the surfaces around him, the seat, the armrests, the headrest in front of him, and the tray table. Even at the height of the H1N1 scare, I'd never seen quite such a swab down. After he finished, I kind of wished for a big sneeze, but I couldn't muster up much more than a cough. Hey, as I mentioned on Twitter at the beginning of this month, I switched over from my little HP netbook to an 11-inch MacBook Air. Yes, it's light. Yes, it's cool looking. But I'll tell you, when I left it in my backpack going through security at both O'Hare and Orlando and came away unberated, unyelled at by the X-ray screener, well, that cinched it. It's the best travel PC out there. I posted a full review on the Travel Commons website with my impressions after the first 2 weeks on the road with it. Now I'm a full month into it, and I'll tell you, my thoughts haven't changed. It can still be a hassle integrating it with my company's Windows infrastructure, but that's easy enough to live with. It's a great machine. And finally, following up on last episode's riff on in-flight Wi-Fi, Google's Christmas present this year to travelers is free Gogo in-flight Wi-Fi on Delta, AirTran, and Virgin American Airlines for the holidays. So it started the weekend before Thanksgiving and runs through January 2nd. I don't think I'll get to use it. The rest of my travel this year is going to be on American, but I hope some of you guys get a chance. Hey, so if you have a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along, just like Linda Martin did. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can send me a Twitter message at mpeacock, or you can post it on the Facebook page, or always, you can go old school and put a comment on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the importance of hotel bathrooms.
From the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott.
Coming to you from the bathroom of the Camelback Inn.
From the bathroom of the LAX Westin.
From the bathroom of the Residence Inn on Tudor Wharf in Charlestown.
From the bathroom, or is it the WC or the toilet? Of the Novotel in downtown Geneva, Switzerland.
Bathroom of the Orchard Hotel in San Francisco.
Bathroom of the Marriott Courtyard in Oldsmar, Florida.
In the bathroom of the Stamford, Connecticut Marriott.
Bathroom of the Philadelphia Marriott.
Coming to you from the bathroom of the Bellagio Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas.
By popular demand, from the business class toilet, or loo, of a South Africa Airlines Airbus A340 somewhere between New York and Johannesburg, South Africa.
Yes, the Travel Commons podcast has long had a close relationship with hotel bathrooms. Being born in the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott in Northwest DC, I think the penultimate bathroom recording was in the shower stall, and it was a huge shower stall of the Camelback Resort. The echo was so bad I had to re-record the whole thing. So I was disappointed, to say the least, when reading through Hotels 2020, a Future of Hotels study from Amadeus, a European travel technology company. You know, there was no mention of the importance of the hotel bathroom, or toilet, or WC, given it's a European company, but no mention of the importance of it on the guest experience. Now, let's be honest. When we walk into a new hotel room, we look at the bed first, and that's mostly because, being the biggest thing in the middle of the room, it's hard not to catch your eye, and then we look at the bathroom. Now, it kind of makes sense. I mean, unless you have a suite, those are the only two rooms you have, so of course you're going to check them out. And if you think about where you spend your time when you're in a hotel, you probably spend most of the time in your bed, with the bathroom being the second place. Now, how close of a second place, you know, there's way too many personal issues there for me to sort out in a five-minute topic segment. So where did the Hotel 2020 study focus? I mean, the usual suspects, the replacement of the fortress-like front desk check-in counter with self-service kiosks and live people roaming around with iPads. So I don't know what. We're replacing front desk lines with mobbing a wandering clerk. That's progress. How? And there was the, packing the rooms with even more technology, sort of 3D TVs. I guess that's so they can replace the revenue that they've lost on Wi-Fi with rentals on 3D glasses. And you know, plug-in jacks so we can more easily display the content that we're now hauling around on our laptops and iPads and Droid phones. And of course, there's always figuring out yet more ways to sell us ancillary services, tea times, massages, spa treatments, more ways to make money from us while we're at the hotel. But there's no mention of the bathroom, which I think is a critical mistake. I mean, the hotel bathroom is probably the most underestimated, unrecognized cause for guest satisfaction or dissatisfaction that there is. I mean, think about it. When you look into that bathroom and see a big shower stall, a fluffy robe, and some cool toiletries, you know, and just a smile comes to your face. Okay, you think, maybe I'll take an extra long shower, something I don't get to do at home. I'm going to try this loofah thing. I mean, does the shower gel go on it or on me before? I don't know, but it's going to be fun trying something new. Now, compare that with the alternative. Small bathroom, water-stained tub with a small chest-high shower head and nothing more than a small bar of soap. Now, not only are you not thinking about purchasing any ancillary services, hell, you're figuring out how to get out of this place and book a room on down the road. And it makes sense. I mean, according to Maslow, we all know that that our basic physiological needs must be met before we can self-actualize. And it doesn't get any more basically physiological than the bathroom. I mean, if a hotel can't deliver a quality bathroom experience, why would I trust it to align my chakras with a hot stone massage? Give me cut-rate toiletries, and I figure you're cutting corners on the scented oil that you're using in the rub-down also. So listen, to all you hoteliers, before you get too wrapped around the axle with the latest flat screens and electronic room service ordering and personalized emails and electronic concierges, invest first in great shower heads and toilets that don't run. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is maximizing your miles. Okay, miles, points. I tell you, they're the one thing that helps make frequent travel bearable. The idea that, you know, going through these hassles, you're earning a free trip to some place that you actually want to go. This year, I used my United miles to fly my family of four from Chicago to Vietnam for free. And then I used Marriott points to cover the hotel, three nights in the hotel in Hong Kong on our way back. And I also used Hilton points for an anniversary weekend here in Chicago, left the kids behind with a grandmother, and we'll use more United miles for a spring break trip to Venice for my wife, my daughter, and me. I mean, doing the math just on this year's redemptions, look, the dollar value of these points absolutely adds up. And of course, where there's value, there's a business opportunity. And a number of websites for tracking miles and points have popped up over the past few years. And one of these sites is GoMiles.com. It's a free service that aggregates points across airline, hotel, and car rental programs, and then displays them in sort of a bar chart on an easy-to-read page. I caught up with the founder and CEO, Michael Komarnitsky, for a Skype chat on why people use GoMiles.
So, Michael, tell me about GoMiles. What's the traveler problem that you're trying to solve there?
GoMiles helps travelers take control of their frequent flyer miles and loyalty assets once and for all. The key problem is that everybody has these accounts, but it's too hard to keep on track of all of the information. Where are your logins? Where are your passwords? Once you get logged in, you find out that your miles expired 6 months ago because of some arcane rule. And that's not even starting to get into the process of redemption. And so everybody knows these things are worth money, but there's no great tools out there to help consumers manage them as assets and unlock the value in them. I had the idea when I was a management consultant. I was traveling the world 40 weeks a year, and I racked up all these miles, but I could never figure out how to untangle the spaghetti of complexity around all these mile programs. And I ended up losing a bunch of miles because of some rules that I didn't know how to follow. So we wanted to build a site that makes it very easy for travelers to manage these assets effectively, and then take the right actions to make sure they're getting the best value out of them.
Well, I can tell you, I just have sort of a running tally in my head of both the frequent flyer and the frequent sleeper programs that I have. So, you know, and it's funny because people ask me, well, how many miles do you have? And I stop and I look up at the ceiling and I go, okay, I got like 378,000 miles on American and maybe, you know, 300,000 on British Airways. And then, wait a minute, Delta and Northwest combined. Okay, wait a minute, that's another set in Southwest and United. And I've probably left Virgin off in the weeds someplace. And to this day, remember like losing probably about 80,000 Hilton frequent sleeper points just because I completely lost track of the expiration period. So I think as you know, as airlines and hotels have looked to sort of crank down and put those expiration dates on, and as they've gone from sort of 3 years down to some of them being 18 months, I think it is a bigger problem for folks.
Yeah, and you obviously are a very frequent flyer, but even casual travelers who fly half dozen times a year, they'll have the best case example we have is users who fly half dozen times a year, but they're married, and they might even have a couple of kids, and so all of a sudden they've got four United accounts and four Delta accounts to manage, and then maybe one or two hotel accounts, and even for infrequent travelers, all of a sudden it's 10 accounts to look through and keep on top of, and everybody's busy today, especially if you have a family, and these are also hard economic times, and people are looking to find ways to find value in what they have, and these things really do have value, and we want to make it super easy to get that value, to realize that value for what you really care about, which is free travel.
So, Michael, there's a number of other companies playing in this space. I was just on TripIt this morning, and I think their TripIt Pro has mileage tracking, and I've seen others with mileage tracking. What's the unique piece for Go Miles? What do you guys do better than anybody else?
I think we have a pretty unique approach that nobody else has, including TripIt Pro, and that is that we're approaching this from an asset lifecycle approach. So where we think everybody else kind of either stops is they say, we're going to build a management solution, or we might even build a search solution, as some people have out there. But we're the only site that helps you manage all your miles, protect them from expiring, earn more so you can grow the size of your assets, and then redeem better. So we have a very different view of it. It's not just management. It's not just search. It's the whole thing in a single integrated view. The second is, We deliver the insight and we tell you the actions you should take. So where other companies stop and say, here's your pile of data, figure it out, we tell you your miles are going to expire and how to protect them. We tell you what deals you should sign up for. And then we tell you whether you should buy that ticket with cash or redeem it with miles. So we deliver that insight. And then last, we're free. TripIt has a great pro product and I've used it, and it's great for the power traveler who wants to spend $50 a year. But we're really optimizing our product for that casual user who doesn't have an open jaw flight with four cities, three hotels, and two cars over 5 days, but somebody who flies 5 to 10 to 15 times a year and has 8 to 10 accounts and just wants to manage them in a single place and wants to know what are the few key actions they need to do to manage these assets effectively. So it's that asset approach. Delivering the insight and the action they need to do, and then making it free. That's the key differentiators for us.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. I think what I pick up, I mean, obviously the free thing resonates with a lot of folks, but I think the other piece is that you guys are a step beyond just aggregating all the balances in one place. And as you said, I think taking that next step, which is giving people advice on what to do with them.
Exactly. And we don't think people want to learn about miles, really. For a lot of people, they've got busy lives. They don't want to figure out all these complicated rules. They just want to know what are the things they need to do to take advantage of these assets and use them appropriately. So we try to give that to them so you can use your miles without learning about how to use your miles.
Hey, listen, let me pivot off of Go Miles to your personal travel. Yeah.
When I walk into a hotel room, and after I scan the room, the next thing I do is I look in the bathroom. For some reason, there's something about the bathroom that just attracts you. Maybe it's because you know you're going to be spending a lot of time in there.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, and I've somehow in the back of my mind, whenever I go into that bathroom, I remember some 2020 expose about how the cleaners in hotels clean the bathroom toilet, and then they clean the sink glasses, and they don't wash their hands or use gloves. So
you know what, my wife will no longer drink out of a bathroom glass after seeing that expose. I think that's spread everywhere. So
yeah, so it's a bit of trepidation. It reminds me to be careful and tread lightly in the bathroom. But I absolutely agree. A good bathroom can actually be quite amazing, and a bad bathroom can be grounds for switching rooms.
Well, listen, Michael, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. And good luck on Go Miles. Is there a URL if listeners want to take a look and want to sign up? Well, what do they need to do?
Yep, they can just go to gomiles.com. It's as easy as it sounds to spell. It's free to sign up, and you can go ahead and get started and start tracking your miles today.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes, so if people somehow have a challenge with spelling Go Miles, they can go to the website and just click on through.
That's great. Thanks, and thanks so much for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Super. I appreciate it. And take care. Have a good afternoon. Okay. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 85. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you tell a friend that they should subscribe also. Once again, the bridge music is from the CC Mixter website, DLDN by St. Paul, Test Drive by Zapac, I don't know, maybe that's how it's pronounced, and Goodbye Sooner or Later by Old Dog being all one word. I'll post links to those in the show notes if you're interested. And always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to MPeacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the wall and on the website. And until we talk again, hopefully in December, take care, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the floor,